I'm Norm Shealy. Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for joining us tonight on Infinite Consciousness. I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to be with us. Tonight we're going to have a dear friend of mine, Dr. Andrea Rezanoff, and we're going to talk about magnesium. But I want to do like a little disclaimer before we get started. Andrea is not a medical doctor, and obviously I'm not a medical doctor, and neither one of us are trying to treat or diagnose you with what we're going to talk about tonight. So I just want to tell you that this information is for informational purposes only. Don't do anything because you hear it on this show without consulting your doctor. So, how are you, Andrea? It's been such a long time.
It really has. You can't imagine how well I'm doing, Ava. I'm doing just great.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm so happy. Lots of things have happened with me. I had a heart attack since I last talked to you.
Oh, no.
Way to the mountains, but I'm doing great. So, one of the
How long ago was that? And was it terribly severe?
Yes, it was really bad.
Oh.
Last September. But I'm doing great, and I've chosen a totally holistic path. And when I came out of the hospital, I was on like 10 or 12 pharmaceuticals. And today, I'm on a third of one little tablet of Bistolic and 50 supplements a day, but I'm off of all the pharmaceuticals, and I'm doing great.
That's really great. That's really great.
I learned a lot.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.
So
I was on many, many supplements for a long, long time, so I know what that is, and you just got to keep it up.
Well, it's I mean, I should be dead with that heart attack that I have, and I'm not dead, and I don't look dead, and you would better than I've been in a long time, actually. So, you know, good things came of it. I'm able to teach people what I've learned with my heart attack, things that they can do to prevent or, you know, make their own symptoms lessen. So everything happens for a reason, you know.
That's amazing.
Everything.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear you sound so good.
Thank you. So tell us, before we get started, tell us who you are, where people can find you. And I know you've written at least one book. You may have had another one since the time that I interviewed you. But tell us who you are and where we can find you.
Okay. Well, I'm Andrea Rezanoff, and I did a PhD and a master's degree in nutrition several years ago at the University of California at Berkeley. I finished up my doctorate in 1982, and I had made my specialty in school the study of the minerals. You know, there's many essential nutrients for humans. There's the protein with the amino acids, and then there's the essential fatty acids, and then there's all the vitamins, and then all the minerals. And so I specialized in the minerals and did my work on the minerals. And when I finished up, I was back teaching. I was a junior high science teacher before I went to graduate school, and I was back teaching at junior high. And I put in a paper to go and speak at this conference in Chicago on some environmental issues, and they asked me to comment on a paper that was being presented. And the paper being presented was trying to get cadmium, a very toxic chemical, minerals, out of the wastewater that was going into the streams. And the way they did it, they suggested, was to take magnesium and to dissolve it into the water, and it would create an electrochemical reaction, and the cadmium would plate out, so they turn into a solid, in other words, from the solution, and they could take the cadmium out of the water, but they were adding this magnesium into the water. Well, I realized that I knew just about nothing about magnesium and nutrition. I knew it was an essential nutrient, but I really didn't know much more than maybe alcoholics could get a deficiency in magnesium. But then I had been taught that a deficiency was very rare for magnesium. It's not something to worry about, and it happened only with general malnutrition. And that was my knowledge base after all that study. So in order to prepare for this conference that I was going to, I went and started studying in the library on the peer-reviewed research around magnesium, and I was so surprised at what I found. This was back in 1985. I was so surprised and astounded what I found, which was that populations that had low magnesium in their water supply or in their soil supplies had more deaths from sudden cardiac death than areas that had more magnesium in their water or in their soil. And then that started me reading about magnesium in general and all the human studies that had been done. And I saw that it had an effect on mood. Magnesium deficiency can manifest as anxiety. It can manifest as depression. It can manifest as hyperactivity. It can manifest as cardiovascular issues, including hypertension, high cholesterol, and some of the issues of metabolic syndrome that turn into diabetes. And so, in fact, so many of the chronic diseases of the modern society were associated with low magnesium. And then I found that the magnesium in our food supply is mainly processed out. For example, in whole wheat, the difference between the magnesium in whole wheat and refined flour is a loss of over 80% of the magnesium. And of course, that magnesium's not added back in. In our enrichment programs in the United States and in many other areas in the world, when they take out the bran and the germ out of wheat to make flour that has a long shelf life, they are required by law in many cases to put back in thiamin, riboflavin, niacin, iron, and folic acid, some really essential vitamins and one mineral that has really staved off a lot of nutritional deficiency diseases. But they are not putting back zinc. They're not putting back magnesium. They're not putting back calcium. They're not putting back iodine. They're not putting back so many other minerals. And, of course, magnesium is one of them. So our diet, unfortunately, is very low in magnesium and has been for decades now. And so these two areas of beginning to see that there were these chronic diseases associated with a low magnesium and that our diet is very low in magnesium through processing mainly, but also there's some losses just from farming changes over the last 50 years, that really are many of the people in our society are low in magnesium and they don't know it and their doctors don't know it. And it's not because the research isn't there. The research is there, but it just has not surfaced up to be taught in the medical schools or really even seriously considered in the government agencies that are setting up the RDAs and so on. And so therefore, I decided it was so interesting to me that I've sort of essentially devoted my life to studying this and trying to get this information out to the population so they can see if this essential nutrient, magnesium, which is very safe to take in very high amounts in oral magnesium, would help their conditions, their pains that they have, their hypertension, their issues for which they're taking other medications, that maybe this would help them. And so if anybody wants to know some of the things that I have found out, I've put it on a web page that's available. It's at www.magnesiumeducation.com. And everybody is free to go and take a look at what they've got, and you can write and ask me questions there or tell your story. But mainly it's there for you to get information on magnesium. And I try to put enough information so that somebody who's just a casual looker can take a look and see what they see, down to a researcher or a physician who needs to get to the scientific research. I try to make that all available at all those levels in a way that is not intimidating to everybody. So that's in a nutshell what I do, Ava.
So one question that came up when you were talking about testing, when people, you know, there's a new test, and there may be more than one new test, I don't know, a VAP test, and I think it tests for magnesium levels, but Does it matter whether you test, just do a regular blood test, or you have to do a special test testing what's inside the cell?
Well, there are, that's a difficult question to answer, because getting at the status of magnesium through blood work is difficult. You can go and get a serum magnesium from your doctor, although this has not been part of the main blood panel that most of us get when we go for our annual exams. So you often have to ask for it special. The thing about it also is that the ranges of the normal range for these tests in many clinical laboratories is too wide. In fact, down at the lower levels of it, if it comes back at one of the lower levels, your doctor will say, oh, you're in the normal range. But in fact, we have found magnesium. Several magnesium researchers strongly believe that many of the people that are considered in the normal range really have a latent magnesium deficit. In other words, they look healthy, they act healthy, but in reality, their serum is low, and their body is taking magnesium out of their bones to keep the serum magnesium at a level that is, it looks like it's within the normal range. But in fact, these people are on a deficit road, and the body tries so hard, needs magnesium so continuously and at all times. And so the body needs to keep the blood range at a certain range. But when it starts to get to this low level, we consider it to be a dangerous sign and that magnesium supplementation is probably needed. Some people like to do a cell test. And the cell test you can do with sublingual cells, and you can send those off to a special laboratory. I believe they're in Oregon, and they will find the internal magnesium values of your cells. And for some doctors, that's more reliable and more indicative of your real status.
Could you give us an example of some symptoms people might, understanding that you're not a medical doctor, but some symptoms that people might have so to help them recognize that they might need to have that checked out?
Sure. There's heart palpitations and arrhythmias when your heart kind of flutters a little bit. That's been tied to magnesium deficit. Some depressions are tied with a magnesium deficit. Inability to get a good night's sleep, muscle aches and pains, back aches, nerves that keep firing, what I call sometimes irrational anxiety. All of a sudden, something's coming up, and you go into an irrational spin of over-worrying it, and you can't stop. You can't get out. That's what I call it. I've experienced this myself because in my history of having chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome, part of that was a magnesium deficit in my case. And so I experienced these things myself quite a bit. When you have a severe magnesium deficiency, it can come out as heart disease and diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. These are some of the common symptoms that we find with a magnesium deficit. And the peer review science has shown this to be absolutely true.
So you just got through doing a very interesting study.
Can you
tell us about that, please?
I certainly would love to. Well, you know, when we last spoke, when we were in person and had that lovely visit, you told me about you using transdermal magnesium chloride and how much it was helping your condition. And I went home and I thought, isn't that so fascinating? And I, as having a really great doctor for my chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome, CFIDS, for a long time he gave me handfuls of vitamins and minerals, taking them three times a day along with all of these acid things for my stomach. I mean, just I had so many pills I was taking and a very strict diet. But I also got every week an injection of vitamin B12 and an injection of magnesium. And with those injections in those early days, my muscle pains and muscle aches went away. And I tried to get off those magnesium injections for years. But I just, every time I did, the muscle aches would come back. I'd have to spend up to a month or more in bed waiting for, you know, my condition to stabilize. So I just more and more had to just keep it up and was continuing on with less vitamins, less handfuls every day, getting better and better and better and better, but still had to have those shots, and my system wasn't stabilized. Well, after talking with you, I called my doctor, because we do it on the phone, and I said, he's a physician, a really good nutritional physician, an MD. And I said, I really would love to get off these shots if I possibly could. And he said, look, let me give you a prescription for transdermal magnesium chloride, and you take it to a compounding pharmacist, and you use this on your skin twice a day. And let's try that for 3 months, and then you call me and let me know how it does. So I went and took the prescription to this wonderful compounding pharmacist here in Hilo, Hawaii. And he made up some of this cream for me. I took it home and I started putting on my legs or my belly or my arms twice a day, once in the morning when I got up and just before I went to bed. And within 3 months, I have to tell you, the most remarkable thing happened was that my condition after 20 years stabilized. I mean, I was not having to call up and cancel things. I was not having to take a month off, take a week off, take 10 days off, like I had been having to do for 20 years in order to deal with this condition that I had. I was surprised. I went, could it possibly be that this magnesium on my skin is actually getting into my system? I just couldn't imagine it. Of course, I'm reading about it all the time. So I was very, very curious. And so I called up a friend of mine who is a professor at the local College of Pharmacy at the University of Hawaii at Hilo. And he wrote back to me. He said, Andy, I think I have somebody who can help you out. And he introduced to me Professor Mahavir, who is a pharmacology professor, and he had done his work, early work, before he got to Hawaii, on transdermal delivery of drugs and medications. And he was an expert in it. So I went and saw him, and I said, I've got this cream that this pharmacist has made, and it's working for me. I want to know, does it go through the skin? Does the magnesium really go through the skin? He said, okay, we can test this. And he showed me, they take this as an in vitro test, where they take a little sample of human skin and they put it into this particular measuring device. And on one side of it, they put a placebo cream, and then on the other ones, the test ones, they put a little bit of the magnesium cream. Now, on the other side of the skin is a big vessel with this circulating water, this pure water, and it has no minerals in it at all. And they draw out from that vessel certain amounts every hour or so, or every 2 hours, and they measure the amount of magnesium that is coming through that skin and into that water vessel. And he tested it, and he found out that with these, we had two formulations by then, one that the compounding pharmacist had made up, and then another one that I had tried making one at home. And he found that the magnesium, sure enough, can be shown to go through human skin in this in vitro, not living system. So we don't really know, you know, if it's a living system or whatever. But it does go through human skin. And we presented this work at the International Magnesium Symposium that was last October in Merida, Mexico. And it was very well received, and the scientists were very interested in this work because it was, we think it was one of the first times that had been shown pharmacologically that magnesium, in fact, can get, at least go through human skin. We don't know if it goes into the bloodstream. We don't know where it goes once it goes in there. This is just preliminary work. But it was very encouraging for me. That plus my own experience of having my condition of over 20 years with tons of oral magnesium going in every day and injections of magnesium every single week to have my condition stabilize, well, you can imagine what that meant to me to have that happen and to have my health almost all the way back. So, and then I remembered what you had said about how the transdermal magnesium had worked for you also. But I remember you saying you had to use it every single day and in large amounts. And I find the same thing for me. I need to really stick to it twice a day. So I'm very curious about if this is just a phenomenon between the two of us or whatever. And so I am ordering up. I want to do a human test with some people. I've ordered a makeup of this cream to be made up both in placebo, some creams without any magnesium, and with magnesium. And I'm going to be looking for people who would be willing to try this cream. And I would give the cream to them for free if they would try it and they would tell me what their condition is they're thinking about and if this helps their condition or does not help their condition or is a moderate one in some way. And I really want to know the truth. If it's not working, I really want to know it. If it is working, I really want to know it. If it's so-so and a maybe, I really want to know it. And so I'm going to be looking for people who would be interested in doing that. And is it all right, Ava, if I tell them how to contact me?
Of course.
Anybody who's interested in being part of this study to find out if transdermal magnesium chloride can, in fact, help conditions that might be associated with a magnesium deficit, just go to my webpage, which is, again, www.magnesiumeducation.com. And you can either go into the contact thing and send us an email, or you can, there's a little place that says, tell us your story. You can go up ahead and just say, I'm interested in being in the magnesium cream study, and give us some information about how we can contact you. And because both those places on the webpage, they go to the same place. They go to my business manager, who's my husband. And so he will get them. And we will compile a list of people, and when the creams arrive, we will contact you and get one out to you. We're very excited about this test. We're very excited to go forward with humans and find out, does this in fact work? And we're hoping to get about, we think we're going to have enough creams for about 300 people to try this.
That's wonderful.
Would you like to try it, Ava?
Let's talk offline. And I'll give you some names of physicians that may be interested in doing something with you.
That would be lovely. It would be even better if we had physicians doing it in their offices. That would be just great.
And I'm sure I know some people that would be willing to or interested in talking to you about doing that. But I want to tell you one thing that I learned. I did this for a long time. And one day my body said, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
I got a symptom. My ankles swelled up. And so I didn't know what it was at first, and then the more magnesium lotion I put on, because I was slathering it on at the time, the more that I put on, the bigger my ankles would get. So then I realized that I had my magnesium and, I guess, calcium out of whack.
Yep.
So people that... you know, at some point, using transdermal magnesium, you'll get filled up.
You are right. And I found that I had that same experience last November, Ava. I was slathering it on, you know, and taking the shots and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, my legs had like pins and needles in them all the way up and all the way down. Luckily, I went to a massage therapist. And I said, here, put some more magnesium on, because, you know, for me, for all those years, it was just more, more, more. And she said, you know, I don't think so. And she said she had this feeling that there was too much. And so she did the massage, and she suggested that I stop the transdermal and that I stop any injections for a while and to concentrate more on my calcium. And she was right, and it took some time for it to go away. It took like over, I would say about 6 weeks for it to settle down. But you're right. It overdid. I overdid it. I think in addition to the calcium and the magnesium can get out of whack either way. And I think the magnesium and potassium also need to be in balance.
Yep. Yep.
And in fact, I just finished writing a commentary about that on some of the research that has shown that in the United States, where we have a very high calcium to magnesium ratio in our food, very, very high, that if you give people more magnesium, they have less heart disease. But in China, where the calcium to magnesium ratio is very, very low, about 1.7 compared to ours, 3. If you give them magnesium, you increase the heart attacks, whereas if you give them calcium, you decrease it. Just the opposite is in the United States, where our calcium to magnesium ratio is about 3 compared to 1.7 in China. Does that make sense to you? Did I explain that right?
I don't know, but I learned something else, too, since this heart attack that you might be interested in. You know me, I'm a knowledge hound. I just love it.
Absolutely.
And I had completely stopped taking any kind of oral magnesium because I believe, and you know, who am I to believe anything since I'm not a doctor, but I believe that you'll never restore magnesium levels using oral supplements. And so I just didn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I had this heart attack, and now that I can look back over the past year, after I had the heart attack, this doctor put me on magnesium glycinate during the day and magnesium carbonate at night. And I still do my transdermal. In fact, when I was in the ambulance, I put some on my heart, and I think that's probably what saved me from dying at the time. Mm-hmm. But I just happened to have some in my purse. And one thing I found is my bowels move so much better now that I do some oral magnesium, and my gut. And I never thought about that aspect of it before. I mean, I knew that they give you milk of magnesia if you get constipated, but I never thought about how important it is to your diet to make sure things move through your gut and out your colon.
That's right. It's
really
true. It makes
a difference in my cholesterol and keeping my gut clean and my homocysteine, just keeping my gut cleaned out like that.
Yeah.
So
right.
I've reintegrated taking oral supplements of magnesium for that reason.
That's really interesting. I have kept oral supplements just for the very reasons you're talking about. And when I was in a thing of having too much, I backed off the transdermal. And I made sure, of course, I didn't have the injections. One thing to keep in mind, and this is why nutrition is so difficult and why we need physicians to really study it. In many of the essential nutrients, when you get too much of an essential nutrient, the symptoms can be very, very similar to a deficiency in that nutrient. So how do you decide? Is this too much? Is this too little? Very difficult, and that's why we need to have physicians taught as much as they can learn about all the essential nutrients and their interaction with each other so they can really help us because going and doing all these supplements on your own in the store, I don't know if it's like this for you guys, but I'm just intimidated by all the supplements that are there and the amount of knowledge it takes and knowing that all of us are different. Each one of us is a separate individual with our own history and with our own biology and with our own genetics. We really need the help of physicians if we're going to get our nutritional status optimized, balanced, especially given the fact that it isn't just magnesium that's low in our modern processed food diet. It's a lot of the vitamins and it's a lot of the minerals. And so we are almost left, some of us are left to use supplements in order to optimize our health. And that's why I love your show, because it talks about these realities of nutrition, and it isn't just more is better. It isn't that simple. And when the dietitians come out and they tell us the best way to do it is with food. Well, they're right. And why is that? It's because all these essential nutrients are balanced in a well-balanced variety diet of many foods. The trouble is that it's processed so much that we get a lot of them out. And how many of us are growing our own food every single day and eating only fresh fruits and vegetables and all whole grains and all those things? That's a hard thing to do in our day and age. And some of us can do well on it, but others of us, we reach a point where there's just not enough of certain nutritional elements in our food supply, and our body begins to feel the subtle, suboptimal deficits, and it's very difficult to know which one is it that I need here. And remember, folks, I only study magnesium. Of the 44 essential nutrients for humans, the only one I study is magnesium. Because there's so much of it, I can't even know all of that. I'm honest to God. Since 1985, I've been reading this stuff, and I still haven't gotten to all of the stuff that's there. And there's more coming out all the time in all kinds of fields.
Well, tell us some more, because I'm dying to know. I haven't talked about magnesium in a really long time, so I'd love my listeners to remind them and hear about it.
Well, this interesting work about the calcium and the magnesium ratio is one of the ones I'm most excited about, because this researcher named Shi Dai did some information on the magnesium and the calcium intakes in Americans, and which of the people at what levels got colon cancer. And he found that people with a certain genetic allele, certain gene, those people that had a calcium to magnesium ratio above 2.6 definitely were at risk for getting cancer of the colon. People without that gene, even with a calcium to magnesium ratio above 2.6, did not have as great of a risk of getting colon cancer. All the people, if their calcium to magnesium ratio was below 2.6, then they had less of a risk of getting cancer of the colon. Now, that's a really interesting study. And I suppose someday, you see, we'll go to the doctor, and they will go, okay, which genes do you have? Aha! I can see you have this particular gene. Well, let's take a look at your diet. Oh, my goodness, look at your magnesium to calcium ratio. Oh, look at your potassium to sodium. Look at your zinc to calcium and your zinc to phosphorus and everything. And they'll know which things you have to stay away from and which things you need to really get every day in order to optimize your health and prevent these chronic diseases. But this is the kind of information that's beginning to come in. It's very exciting, but it's got a long way to go before it is embraced by the entire medical community.
You know what?
One of the reasons being is so much information out there.
I did that 10 years ago. This lady that I interviewed on my radio show, her name is Amy Yatsko. She's a physician up in Maine. And she works with Mark Nauvoo, researching with him. And she did a methylation genetic test on me 10 or 12 years, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was so new at the time. Nobody knew about it. And it was so overwhelming, the information that came back. I didn't realize what a gold mine that I had. I pulled that test out about 3 months ago and started reviewing it again after all these years. And it was 100% accurate. If I had have listened to that test 10 years ago, and not only that one, but Gottfried Kellerman at Neurosciences did a neurotransmitter test on me. Spectracell did some, whatever the tests that they did. And if I'd have listened, all the tests came back and said the exact same thing. If I'd have listened, I would have never have had a heart attack, and I would have never walked on a day on this earth in depression. They were 100% accurate.
Isn't
that great?
That's the
thing I'm telling people about right now. Get these tests. I think it's $450 or something like that, and it's worth every penny of it. It tells you exactly what genes are messed up and exactly what nutritional supplement or food that you need to flip it back the other way. It's amazing.
Wow. That is amazing. But, you know,
it really is.
the research is really, it's been coming in little bits and pieces here in these little laboratories. People haven't really gotten what does this mean. But the fact that you got that so long ago, those were very forward-thinking people to put that together and put that knowledge together. But that's where
I'm
moving.
But I didn't listen.
It's hard to listen. It's hard to listen when you're healthy. See, that's the thing about nutrition. When you're feeling good, it's like, oh, I'm okay. I can just stop and get whatever. You know, I'm fine. It takes a condition like you've had. And boy, like me, I was in bed for 3 years. Could not hold a book because my muscles would just get too tired. Boy, and I am a basically very healthy person. But that's what nutrition can do. And I was a nutritionist. And it took that for me to begin to really see this is really important. And
it makes sense. People soak in, what is that stuff? Epsom salt.
Epsom salt.
Milder. It makes so much sense to me.
It really does. In fact, that was the beginning of the knowledge about magnesium. That was the first time that anybody realized that magnesium might be of benefit was in Epsom, England. They found that the farm animals did better when they drank this particular water from this well. They got so much healthier, and it was magnesium sulfate. Magnesium sulfate. And one of the first times I heard about transdermal magnesium was when someone wrote to me and said, can magnesium go through the skin? And I said, Epsom salts for the longest time. People went to the baths, and they said they felt much better after going into the baths. But at that point, it was like, oh, no, there's no research showing that. But what I had to realize was, well, there's no research showing that it doesn't. There's just an assumption that, well, of course, it doesn't go through the skin. Well, that was an assumption. It's not necessarily what's real. We have to go a little bit farther, keep our minds open. The other thing to remember, I want all of your listeners to remember, is that preventing these conditions that Ava and I have experienced and we're talking about is so much easier than coming back. Ava, would you agree with that?
Oh, man, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You start to get a nutritional imbalance or a nutritional deficit, and coming back from it, at least for me, is still 23 years later, I am still trying to come back up. So how much easier if I had known and I could have just prevented it, especially during those stressful, stressful times when your magnesium requirement soars.
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm lucky. When I had my heart attack, I could have easily have been, my quality of life could have gone down to nil, and I'm lucky. But if, you know, prevention and early detection is the most powerful resource that you have, because you're not guaranteed that your quality of life is not going to go away.
That's right. And one of the things I'm very concerned about is how much depression there is in our society. And I know essential nutrients that are associated with depression. And it's time for somebody to put all that information together. But there's also some about dietary intake of magnesium can actually modulate depression. And here's an article by a person named T. Yary, Y-A-R-Y, who found that dietary intake of magnesium was correlated with the risk of getting depression. And this is a direct test. I have found about 5 or 6 peer-reviewed science research articles that either directly or indirectly talk about magnesium and depression. And so this was a very good study by Yary that I want to recommend to people if they have a chance to read it. If you'd like to have a copy of it, just send me a note on the web page, and I'll make sure you get a copy of it. And I'm trying to pull together, and there is a new book out by several scientists about the role of magnesium in the central nervous system. And
that
it seems
really,
to have something
about
to do.
It sounds really interesting.
It is. It's fascinating. It has to do There's an article by a woman from France who is a pediatrician, and she talks about ADD in children, and she has done an extensive amount of work in that area. And they talk about Parkinson's, they talk about Alzheimer's, they talk about depression, they talk about cognitive development.
What's the name of that book?
Oh, let me get it. Well, it's a scientific book. It's pretty tedious to read. It is called Magnesium in the Central Nervous System. It's edited by Robert Vink, V-I-N-K, and Mihai Necifor, N-E-C-H-I-F-O-R. And Professor Necifor is in Romania. He's been studying magnesium and the central nervous system and psychological disease, schizophrenia, and so on, the magnesium impact of it for decades. He is very, very knowledgeable. And Robert Vink is a medical doctor in Australia. He is the head of a medical school there, and he's an expert on magnesium in brain trauma. These are excellent people. And so if anybody wants the reference for this, and I believe it's online, I think you can get it online.
Any research with epigenetics and magnesium? Do you know?
Epigenetics. No, I don't. Not that I have looked, though, Ava.
No,
have you found any?
I haven't looked. It just crossed my mind just this moment. So I was just curious.
There's a lot of epidemiological studies, a lot of population studies with magnesium, large ones. And there's a recent study that showed that populations, you see, the modern processed food diet is spreading all over the world. And as it does, and it takes the place of traditional diets that are traditionally high in magnesium because they have a lot of nuts, seeds, and whole grains. And as the modern processed food diet comes and replaces these, the magnesium content of the diet for the whole population goes down. And the amount of things we talked about, hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, prediabetes, heart disease, depression, all start to go up. And it's spreading around the whole world. So this is the word that I'm trying to get out about this one nutrient. But remember, at the very beginning I said one of the things that I had learned about magnesium when I was in graduate school is that people who have a magnesium deficit often have, it's part of a general malnutrition. I'm not so sure that was wrong. Because if you're missing magnesium, then you might be missing B12, zinc, manganese, boron, folic acid, thiamin, riboflavin, pantothenic acid, and so on. And so, of course, eating fruits and vegetables, legumes, nuts, whole grains is a really, really good way to go.
But now, when you say eat your fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and nuts, do you mean go down to the grocery store and buy one of those packages of salted nuts?
I like to go to the store where I can get them fresh nuts out of the vat, and so I don't use salted nuts. You want to talk about salt a little bit?
Well, I was thinking more about the ones that are old and not raw.
Oh.
Cooked to death.
Well, no, you don't want to have, you have to be careful of your nuts because you don't want to eat rancid nuts that have started to have their beautiful essential amino fatty acids start to oxidize. That you don't want. You want them fresh because once they start to oxidize, they start to go. And so fresh as possible is the best way to go with your nuts. But a lot of people don't eat nuts because they have been seen as a high-fat food and not good for weight loss or weight maintenance, but really, they're one of the highest sources of magnesium, seeds and nuts and legumes and chocolate. Chocolate is high in magnesium. You know what else is high in magnesium? Some of the espresso coffees are high in magnesium, but they're not so high in the other nutrients. So again, we're looking for a balance of good diet. I hate to say it to people because I know it's so hard to do.
Well, you have about six or eight, seven minutes. Is there anything you want to cover salt? I just want to give you this last bit of time to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, well, thank you, Ava. Well, let me see. I think we've covered sort of the main things about magnesium and the chronic diseases and the issues in our society that are more than health for each of us, which is as important as it can possibly be, but that also the cost of our health care. If we're all going to start taking meds, which a lot of us are already doing, to treat something that is in fact a nutritional deficiency, then really we're just staving off a disease state. We're not going in and giving the body what it needs to heal itself and to come back to its optimal state of health, given its environment and given its genetics. And so that's why I am so keen on telling people about the importance of magnesium as one of the essential nutrients that they need to have in their body, and how easy it is, just because it's not well known, for their doctors and their other physicians to not be as knowledgeable about it as they are, say, about vitamin D or calcium, and that a balance of all of these are, in fact, necessary. The other thing I would like to remember, everybody to remember, is that if longevity is our goal, then we're doing something right. The longevity of the human race is growing, as is the population of the world. And I remember when I was in graduate school, when we thought, oh my God, we're all going to be starving to death because the population is growing so fast and there's just not going to be enough food. Well, we've gotten through that, and gee, who would have thunk that obesity is our biggest problem? In other words, too much food. But when those days were there, everybody thought, well, if everybody has enough calories and protein, they're going to be just fine. And so the agriculture and the Green Revolution really focused on getting enough calories, mainly in the form of sugar, and enough protein to all the people in the world so everybody would have enough sugar and protein. They're now realizing that all the vitamins and all the minerals have got to be a part of the food supply of humanity if we're going to have a truly healthy and sustainable population of people in robust health who are not depressed, who are not becoming irrationally violent, who are not in irrational anxiety, who are not becoming bored and morose because of a physical deficiency, that we need to have all these nutrients in our food supply. And I think you're going to begin to see it. But those of us in the transition, especially those as we grow old, we need to still prevent any of those deficiencies so that we do not experience these chronic diseases, which is so difficult to come back with, just because physiologically it is, and secondly, because it's so difficult to find a health practitioner who is knowledgeable enough to help you do it. And you really do need the help. It's a difficult thing to do. The other thing that's happening, of course, is that our society has now had at least two or three generations on this. So our mothers have grown up in a slightly deficient nutritional in terms of vitamins and minerals. Then they've gotten pregnant, and they've had babies, and they've nursed those babies. And those babies are a little bit less as they grow up. And then they have babies. Nurse those babies. Again, we are diluting these nutrients with time. And of course, it's amazing that we're doing as well as we are. And that's a great blessing. But for the individual who is in pain, for the individual who is taking all these meds, which I'm not saying don't do it. If it saves your life, of course you have to do it. But the long-term thing, if you can think if there's a nutritional aspect to what you're doing, try to find a knowledgeable practitioner who can help you bring your body back with the essential nutrients that it needs so your body can heal itself and gradually, and I mean very gradually then, get those meds with any of the side effects you might be experiencing, taper them off with a knowledgeable physician as you bring your body back to full health. And then have a lovely, lovely, vibrant life into your these extra years that all of us are getting. It's a great bonus to life. It's a wonderful time to be alive. But not if you're in pain and not if you're sick. And that's what nutrition is really all about. I also want to thank you, Ava, for the opportunity to talk with you. And I also want to tell you, just in a personal way, how much I've enjoyed knowing you and how much I enjoyed visiting you and your family. And I just think what you do is terrific. And I really want to wish you the very best of health.
Well, thank you. You got to come back and see me. I moved up in the mountains, and now I live down a dirt road in the middle of the woods surrounded by creeks.
Good for you. Good for you.
It. Maybe I can come and see you sometime.
I would love it. I really would. I live in the jungle.
I know. I live out in the, see that.
Yeah, I live out in the middle of nowhere, except that I live with all the trees, and the trees are the jungle, and it's quiet, and the birds. And yes, I need to be in a non-stressful place, just like you do.
Do you live in Hilo?
I live out in Pahoa. It's close to Hilo. Are you still going to work?
No.
Okay, good.
Not working.
And how are the kids?
Everybody's great. I mean, there's been a lot of things happen. We should talk sometime. But we walked through all the things that happened, and we're all great.
Oh, I'm so glad. I don't know if they remember me, but you tell them I remember them and give them my very best.
Tell us one more time where we can find you. And your book, too. Have you written another book?
No, I haven't. I've just been focusing on some peer-reviewed papers. I did a paper for Nutrition Review called Suboptimal Magnesium Status in the United States Population. I did a paper called showing the rise of calcium intake compared to magnesium intake over the last 30 years in the data of the United States. And I've just done a recent paper in a journal called Plant and Soil for agricultural people on the impact of the declining magnesium in some of our food crops and the impact on global human health. I also did a web publication on the magnesium hypothesis of cardiovascular disease. What I was laying out there was how it is that magnesium, rather than cholesterol and fat and all those things, is really what could be responsible for the epidemic in heart disease that we've been experiencing since the 1950s. But my book that I wrote came out in 2003. It's called The Magnesium Factor, and I wrote it with Dr. Mildred Seelig. She's a physician who studied magnesium for over 40 years, and she passed away at the age of 87. And that is still available on Amazon. It's not in Kindle, but it's in hard. And that covers the peer-reviewed research, and it's for the layperson, up through 2002. There's been a lot of research since then, but the general gist of it is pretty much the same. And if anybody wants to reach me on my webpage, either because they want to be part of the magnesium cream study, or if they just have questions or want any of the things that I've talked about this time or with references for them, you can contact me at www.magnesiumeducation.com. And I'd love to hear from everybody.
Thank you so much. You've been great, Andrea. I'm so glad to reconnect with you after all these years.
So am I, Ava.
Thank you so much. And have a good one, okay?
Absolutely.
And let's talk soon, okay?
Okay.
Bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.